canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Oops, we have to ask for questions first. Six questions are asked by the sages of Navnamasharanya, and then we will answer those questions. And with those answers, we will range through different parts of the other chapters. So those were the answers to the first and second question, 6 and 7. But the questions that you were asked to answer were, explain the use of the word dharma in relationship to both the word religion and Srila Prabhupada's use of the word in his purports. So who was able to write that? In relation, the servants, generally speaking, in the material world, someone is doing some service for another, and the last thing it is pleasing, because he would rather that person be serving him. And there he is, just to make a few dollars, he's got to do some service for some cranky old boss. Not at all pleasing. So therefore, when someone says, oh, we're all deep Krishna Das, and we think, oh, I'm a servant, oh no, it's the last thing I want. But this is something different. Okay, the second question is, always the senses and therefore the mind are always longing to do something, to engage. And this is the precarious, difficult position for someone practicing Jnana Yoga or Sankhya Yoga, because the senses can't be engaged, and therefore one has to, just with the strength of intelligence, because there is no sweet higher taste of service to Krishna, it is negation of activity. So therefore, just with one's intelligence, one has to restrain the senses. And life is very, very dry. One can't see wonderful things. One can't hear wonderful things. One can't taste wonderful things. So it is such a struggle, and one's position is always very precarious, because at any moment, the senses may attack and make their demands. Go ahead, Krishna. The promise by Krishna is that if we just perform bhakti to please Krishna, then all else will come. Om Ganitam Inandasya Tinantina Slakaya Chaksusunal Tam Janitasman Sigurinama. Sri Chaitanya Namisha Chetra Rishaya Shonakadaya Satram Svagaya Lokaya Sahasra Samamasata. Once, in a holy place in the forest of Naimisharanya, great sages headed by the sage Shonaka assembled to perform a great thousand-year sacrifice for the satisfaction of the Lord and his devotees. This is the beginning of the verses describing the Bhagavatam. The first three verses were, as Prabhupada says in the beginning of the purport, a prelude. Practically a preface. And in that preface, we heard how what the absolute truth actually is. And we saw this Param Satyam is directly indicating Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then we heard the glories of the Bhagavatam and how the Bhagavatam is different from other scriptures. And that this Paradamo, maybe we can put this down a little. The Paradamo, or the highest religion, is explained in lesser forms of religion, Kaitava Dharma. Religion that is meant to offer material gain in exchange for our worship. This is kicked out. Rejected by the Bhagavatam. Because Srila Sukadeva Goswami Or rather, Srila Vyasadeva, he wrote this in his maturity. And Sukadeva Goswami spoke this Bhagavatam, and Sukadeva Goswami was completely detached from everything material. And by the touch of the lips of Sukadeva Goswami, this Bhagavatam has become still sweeter. And therefore, kim vaya parayar. It means, what is the need for another scripture? This Bhagavatam is so glorious. When this one, sad, Ishwara sad, sadhya, lidya avaruddhate tra, it establishes, just by the process of hearing this Bhagavatam, the Lord becomes established within the heart. Tachanat, immediately. And he begins immediately doing work. Although the Lord, by definition, doesn't work, he immediately begins working, and that working is vidhyantistoya badrani vidunoti saritsatam, removing the inauspiciousness from the heart by his causeless mercy in reciprocation for the eagerness of the devotee to hear. And then we heard in the third verse, so these are the preface verses, how this Bhagavatam is the ripened fruit, nigama kalpa taru. This is the ripened fruit of the Vedas, compiled again by Srila Vyasadeva in his maturity. And it is by the mercy of Srila Vyasadeva and Srila Sukadeva Goswami, and then by Suta Goswami, and then by Srila Prabhupada, it has become very dravya samyutam. It is very relishable and easy to digest, easy to swallow and assimilate. So after explaining the glories of the Bhagavatam and the glories of the Absolute Truth and the glories of the speakers and compilers of the Bhagavatam, now the second speaking of the Bhagavatam is going to be described in this verse. And it takes place in the holy place of Namasharanya, which in the word by words, it is Prabhupada describes animisha ketra chetra. And the word animisha is the name of Lord Vishnu, and it means he who does not close his eyelids, because the closing of the eyelids is an imperfection, a necessary imperfection for a soul within a material body. And there is no one who doesn't close their eyelids who has a material body. And actually, the eyelids are under the control of a demigod. They are not under your control. Just stop closing your eyelids. You can't get. You can try. See how long they are. Whoops. It shows that we are not the supreme controller. Something so simple like that. We are so proud, and we can't even stop closing our own eyelids. But Krishna, this name of Krishna is Anamisha. The Lord does not close his eyelids. So everything is full of deep meaning in the Bhagavatam. And even if we can just grab what's on the surface, it will be so purifying to our hearts. So this place of Namasharanya is very dear to that Lord, Lord Vishnu, Lord Krishna. And therefore in this holy place, great sages headed by Shonaka Rishi gathered. And in that gathering, they were performing a great thousand-year sacrifice. And the purpose of this sacrifice, as the verse says, is to please Krishna and to please the Lord's devotees. And the purpose, what was in their mind while performing this sacrifice, will be revealed. And Prabhupada explains it right in the, more or less in the middle of the purport, which is, say, the second full paragraph in page 62, on the next page of the purport. Why would sages perform a sacrifice? What's in it for them? But the very nature of a sage is that he is concerned about others. Therefore, Prabhupada explains, the great sages are always anxious to do good to the people in general. And as such, the sages, headed by Shonaka and others, assembled at this holy place at Namasharanya with a program of performing a great and continuous chain of sacrificial ceremonies. Forgetful men do not know the right path for peace and prosperity. However, the sages know it well, and therefore, for the good of all men, they are always anxious to perform acts which may bring about peace in the world. They are sincere friends to all living entities. Suridam Savadehinam Ajatra. They have no enemies. They are sincere friends to all living entities, and at the risk of great personal inconvenience, they are always engaged in the service of the Lord for the good of all people. This is the very nature of a sage. He lives for the welfare of others. This is wonderful. And therefore, for the welfare of others, they were performing this great sacrifice, which would last 1,000 years, for the pleasure of Krishna. Because when Krishna is pleased, then everyone is pleased. One day, text 5, after finishing their morning duties by burning a sacrificial fire and offering a seat of esteem to Srila Suta Goswami, the great sages made inquiries with great respect about the following matters. So, Suta Goswami was the most revered of the sages of Namasharanya, and he was the son of Ramahashan Suta, who is described in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam. When these great sages were hearing the Puranas, the different shastras from this Ramahashan Suta at Namasharanya, Lord Balaram came through on pilgrimage. And Ramahashan, the sage Ramahashan, he did not stand up when Lord Balaram entered. Because when one is sitting on the Vyasasan, it is not required that one stands up to show respect to someone. But who had come? It was Lord Balaram himself, who was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this was considered an offense, completely inappropriate. He was sitting in the seat, which meant that he was the learned personality. A learned personality, and he was teaching everyone else, but he did not know the conclusion of the Shastra, that the Lord ultimately has to be respected and surrendered to with great devotion. So therefore, Balaram decided to teach him a lesson. And when Balaram decides to teach someone a lesson, he really teaches them. So he picked up a straw of kusha grass, which is a little prickly and pointed. And with this straw, he killed Ramahashan Suta. Ramahashan, not Ramahashan Suta. Just with a blade of grass, practically, he killed him, because Lord Balaram can do anything he wants. He's the Supreme Lord. So, as a result of that, the sages told Balaram, they requested to set a good example for others, that he had to repent for this, because he had killed someone who was giving the discourse. So he killed, in repentance, atonement, he killed one demon following the orders of the the sages. And then he went on, continued on Parikrama. And also he gave blessings to the son of Ramaharshan, that he would be, he himself would embody all the blessings that the sages had given to Ramaharshan. The sages had blessed Ramaharshan to be able for a long life and for many other blessings, so he could complete the sacrifice properly. They had, because these Brahmin sages had the potency to bless. So they blessed him in that way, and yet Balaram had killed them. He had circumvented their blessings. So Lord Balaram transferred those blessings to the son of Ramaharshan, who was called Ramaharshan Sutta or Sutta Goswami. And that Sutta Goswami, who is the son of Ramaharshan, is now fully blessed by everyone, including Lord Balaram himself, who is the original spiritual master, the original servant of Krishna. And he is speaking. He is about to speak. They have seated him on the Vyasasan, and they are now offering him great respect before inquiring from him. Text 6. The sages said, "Respected Sutta Goswami, you are completely free from all vice." The Sanskrit word is anaga. Agha means sin, and anaga means you are sinless. In the Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna is called mayanaga. He is freed from all sin. So, similarly, Sutta Goswami is being glorified because he is sinless. He is pure, free from all vice. And therefore, he is capable of having no interest, self-interest, selfish interest when speaking. So they first glorify him by saying that. You are completely free from all vice. You are well-versed in all the scriptures famous for religious life. That is the Dharma Shastra. You know the Dharma Shastra. You know the Puranas and the histories, the Itihas. Because you have gone through them under proper guidance. You have thoroughly learned from your teacher. And also, you have explained them. So Prabhupada in his purport explains, the Acharya or the Goswami must be well acquainted with all these literatures. To hear and explain them is more important than reading them. One can assimilate the knowledge of the revealed scriptures only by hearing and explaining. That means, our Prabhupada explains, hearing is called Shravanam and explaining is called Kirtan. The two processes of Shravan and Kirtan are of primary importance to progressive spiritual life. Only one who has properly grasped the transcendental knowledge from the right source by submissive hearing can properly explain the subject. In other words, that in the explaining, in the preaching, that knowledge that one has heard or read in the Bhagavatam or other books by in this way that are explained properly by Srila Prabhupada, by the process of hearing and explaining, then that knowledge will fructify in the heart and turn into realization. If one doesn't engage in kirtanam or preaching, then his one's realizations will remain shallow. And on the other hand, if one doesn't engage in proper shravanam or hearing, then there will be no question of proper kirtanam or glorification. So the both go together and both are required. We must hear and we must glorify, chant or preach. So the sages glorify the learning of Sutta Goswami and the purity of Sutta Goswami. Text 7. Being the eldest learned Vedantist, O Sutta Goswami, You are acquainted with the knowledge of Vyasadeva, who is the incarnation of Godhead. And you also know the other sages who are fully versed in all kinds of physical and metaphysical knowledge. And because you are submissive, your spiritual masters have endowed you with all the favor bestowed upon a gentle disciple. Therefore, you can tell us all that you have scientifically learned from them. So here are the qualifications of the speaker from whom one should hear. As Prabhupada said, before one can be a teacher, a spiritual master, one must be a disciple. One must be learned. One must be pure-hearted, free from the breaking the principles, as Prabhupada explains in the purport. So after establishing the qualifications of Suta Goswami in this great sacrifice to speak here, the sages begin their inquiry. Please, therefore, being blessed with many years, explain to us in an easily understandable way what you have ascertained to be the absolute and ultimate good for the people in general. So here, this is the first question that the Shonaka Rishi and the sages are asking Suta Goswami. They're asking, what is the Shreyas? Or what is the actual good for people? You have studied all the literatures, the Puranas, the Itihas, the Dharma Shastras. You have gone through everything. You have all blessings. So we want to ask you to explain to us what is actually the essence of all these things. And therefore they continue in the next text, the text after the next one. Burini buri kamani shotavyani vibhagasa ato sadho trayatsaram samudrita manasaya bruhi badraya bhutanam yayena supasidati. They ask, there are many varieties of scriptures, and in all of them there are many prescribed duties. Every book, every scripture has its own angle from which it's speaking. And these can be learned only after many years of study in their various divisions. Therefore, O sage, O Suta Goswami, please select the essence of these scriptures and explain it for the good of all living beings, that by such instructions their hearts may be fully satisfied. Yayena supasidati. So there are two questions that they ask, and these two questions will be answered at once by Suta Goswami. The two questions are, what is it? Because you are so learned, you have gone through everything. We want the sar, the word used in this text 11, atas sadotrayat saram. What is the essence, the sar? You've gone through all the divisions of the scriptures. Now you please tell us the fruit of all your learning. What is the essence of everything? And that essence of everything will naturally be the thing that is good for all the people. And what is good for all the people? That thing will bring them yenapma supersedity. It will bring them full satisfaction to the heart, to the self. Because we see, and they were very, very much aware of what was going to happen next over the next thousands of years, that Kali Yuga was going to begin. So therefore, because Kali Yuga was going to begin, the sages had gathered to do a sacrifice for the betterment of people. Because the nature of a sage is not only that he knows the benefit of what is good for the people, but he knows the natural tendency of the people in general is to go wrong, especially in Kali Yuga. In Kali Yuga, there is so much unfavorable, bad influence. And therefore, there's an urgency. The first thing in text 10, in between these two verses that ask the first two questions, what is the Shreyas, the good for all people, in that question, there's this Pumsam Ekanta Shreyas. This ekantata means absolute, and pumsam means for people, and shreyas means the good, the ultimate good. So what is the absolute and ultimate good for people in general? So you've gone through all the scriptures, so tell us. So in between these two verses, there's a very heavy verse. In between these two questions, this is prayena payusha sabhya. Prayena, praya means almost. Prayena means almost always. Alpa ayusha. Alpa means just a little. Ayusha means life. Sabhya, they say, old learned sage. People in Kali Yuga, their lives are very, very short. Although the propaganda is by medical science and will change your nose, will change your liver, will change your kidneys, will change your eyes, will change your heart, give you new knees, new hips, put a new smile on your face and crank you up and send you out again. Although that's the promise, actually, when you look at people's faces, one can see the lie in that, because people are drained of life. The food is all poisoned, the air is poisoned, the water is poisoned, the people's habits are horrible. Engaging in intoxication, illicit sex, gambling, eating poisoned meat. And therefore, you can see it in the people's faces, like dead people. Their life has been drained, and yet the audacity of the promise is that you're doing better. People are in so much continuous anxiety. People can't find work, even to maintain themselves physically. Anxiety over thieves, anxiety over diseases, anxiety being one of the prime causes of disease in and of itself, and yet everyone is convinced, oh, we're doing better. But actually, prayena payusha sala, that people in Kali Yuga, their lives are reduced. Kalavasmin yuge jana, manda sumanda. Matayo, manda sumanda means people are lazy in Kali Yuga. Lazy means that they are influenced deeply by the mode of ignorance. So deeply influenced by ignorance. And to solve the misery that ignorance causes, people take shelter of more ignorance. Intoxication, illusion, frivolity, movies, horrible music, sports, heroes. Ignorance breeds deeper ignorance. People are lazy, they don't want to do things. Manda sumanda. Sumanda matyo means they are misguided. Misguided spiritually, misguided materially. People think that sense gratification is the only purpose of life, and therefore their life dwindles. And even if someone is a little spiritually inclined, then there's so many unlimited spiritual paths, and so many cheaters taking their money with new improved methodologies of realization, that people become confused, hopeless, and poorer. Especially they become poorer. Misguided, lazy, unfortunate, mandabhagya, unfortunate. People can't even, always in anxiety, lack of finances, lack of peace at home. Husbands and wives continuously fighting, children growing up in that atmosphere. If they grow up with their mother and father always fighting, they're fortunate, because at least they have a mother and a father. And then, finally, upadrutaha. This is Kali Yuga. Upadrutaha means the ultimate aspect of Kali Yuga is that everyone's minds are disturbed. Disturbed with unlimited anxieties, fears, desires, billboards pumping our mind always with buy this, attain. Wanted to help the poor people of Kali Yuga, and they knew that no one has the time or the discipline to undergo Vanashrama Dharma or study the whole breadth of the scriptures and come to the actual proper conclusions. So therefore, out of their kindness to the people in general, they have decided to undergo austerities themselves for the benefit of others. And this is what is the mark of a sage. And also, it is what makes one a sage. Unless one undergoes that type of training, undergoing austerity for the benefit of others, selflessness, Krishna will not make one into truly a holy person. Because one has to be kind-hearted to others, compassionate. So therefore the sages had sat down to perform this sacrifice, and they asking Suta Goswami, what? Please tell us, this is Kali Yuga. These people need help, special help. Their lives are short, they are misguided, lazy, unlucky, and their minds are so disturbed continuously. How is it possible that they're going to take advantage of the scriptures? So you please tell us, without going through the different stages of one should do this for 20 lives and this for 20 lives and 40 years at this and then progress to this and then do karma and then jnana and then yoga. No, just tell us what is paradhamo. What is the supreme religion? Not the different steps to the supreme. What is that supreme religion? After you have studied the essence of all the scriptures, what is that essence of the scriptures? And that essence of the scriptures will give the this shreyas for the people in general, the good, and by that they will finally achieve yayatma supersedity. By that they will achieve some happiness in their heart, because now they could see the future, that the people will be not happy. They will be miserable. So these are the first two questions. What is the good for the people in general? And second, what is the essence of the scriptures? Now, next week, and this week, what we're going to do is go through the six questions, which means the first chapter, and show where they're answered and speak something about how they are answered by Suta Goswami. Next week, some of these verses will be covered again, because quite a few of these, the answers are in the second chapter. And in that second chapter, Suta Goswami will give a progression in devotional service as he answers these questions. So we will speak more about this next week. But for now, let us jump to Canto 1, Chapter 2, Text 6 and Text 7, because these two verses are the answer to these two questions of the sages, the first two questions of the sages. And these verses are very famous, and they are very important. So the first verse, please repeat after me. This is text 6 in the second chapter. Savai pumsam paradamo.
Savai pumsam paradamo.
Because remember, the sages, in the first question, in text 9, knowing that Kali was approaching with its horrible qualities, degrading people to the lowest points of ignorance, they're asking pumsan, for a person, ekantita shreyas, for a person, the word pumsan is used. What is the shreyas, the absolute good for the people in general? And the answer, the first answer, savai pumsam, certainly for mankind, for people. He's going to explain what the essence of scripture is and what is actually good for them. And that thing that is good for them is paradhammo, the supreme occupation, the supreme sustenance for the living entity, the supreme religion for the living entity. And that is yato, bhakti, for it hokshaja. Bhakti to Krishna, the transcendental Lord. Savai pumsam paradhammo.
Savai pumsam paradhammo.
Yato bhakti vedhokshaji.
Savai
pumsam paradhammo.
Savai pumsam paradhammo.
Yato bhakti vedhokshaji. So one should perform bhakti to the Lord. But what is the nature of that bhakti? How should it be performed? That's described in the second part of this verse. Ahaituki apratiyata.
Ahaituki apratiyata.
Yayatma supersedati.
Yayatma supersedati.
That same word, yayatma supersedati. If one performs this paradhammo, if the mankind or individuals perform paradhammo, devotional service, bhakti hokcha jay, that is the supreme religion, the supreme occupation, the supreme activity, then everyone will become so pleased and satisfied in the heart. And there is no other way to become satisfied in the heart. But that bhakti must be ahaituki and apatiyata. Haituki means causeless. That means that when one performs one's devotional service, bhakti to it, hokchaja, there is nothing one wants from that service other than Krishna is pleased, that hokchaja is pleased. That is bhakti. So Srila Rupa Goswami in Bhaktivedanta Sindhu, Nectar of Devotion, has composed the famous verse which defines this pure devotional service as Anya Bilasita Sanyam Jnana Karma Anavrita Anakulena Krishna Shilanam Bhakti Uttamam. This is pure devotional service. It is causeless. Jnana Karma Anavrita. There is no desire on one's part, I am doing this to gain anything for me. No desire to gain any karma or fruit for me. No desire to gain any knowledge that I am not my body for me. Just simply Krishna's pleasure. So therefore Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when describing this mood, explains Janmani Janmani Shvare, that I don't even care. Nadaram najanam nasundarim kavitam va jagadisha kamani. I don't even care for wealth, women, this, that. I don't even care to get out of the material world. All I want is your devotional service. Causeless. Ahaituki. Tai. Cause this devotional service to you. Birth after birth after birth after birth after birth. You want to put me in this position in my next life? Okay. If you want me to bring me to Golok, okay. You want, but the serving mood is fully developed. That is pure devotional service. Not the taking mood, but the serving mood is fully developed. And as the serving mood is fully developed, Prabhupada explains towards the end of the purport, the relationship is one of the servant and the served. That is our eternal relationship with Krishna. That is the exhibition of the Paradhamma. It is transcendental and completely distinct from our experience in material existence. The relation of servant and the served is the most congenial, most pleasing form of intimacy. Now, people either they have this approach avoidance mood towards intimacy. Everyone is longing for intimacy and everyone fears it so heavily. Because the mood in the material world is exploitation under the guise of intimacy. Let us become intimate and I will exploit you. And people are tired of being exploited. But the relationship with Krishna of the servant, serving Krishna, is so pleasing form of intimacy. And one can realize the heights of this, Prabhupada explains. One can realize it as devotional service progresses. So it progresses from the beginning to the highest stages of prema bhakti, where one is actually living fully in his eternal relationship with Krishna. So intimate, inconceivably intimate, and one realizes it as his serving mood develops. But not just serving mood, but intimate, loving, devotional serving mood. Therefore, everyone should engage himself in that transcendental loving service of the Lord, even in the present conditional state of material existence. This is the glory of this parodharma or bhakti, is that it is both sublime and easy. It is easy for the neophytes, as Prabhupada coins the phrase, who are just at the threshold of bhakti. And it is also sublime for the advanced devotees who, through practicing their bhakti, are directly experiencing Krishna personally. It is easy and sublime. In the third canto of the Bhagavatam, by practicing sadhana bhakti, it describes, Kapila Muni describes some of the results, some stages of the results. This is in the 29th chapter when he's talking to Devahuti, explaining devotional service, texts 11 and 12. Maguna shuti matrena mai savaguhasaye manogatir vitstina yata ganga baso ambudau lakshanam bhakti yogasya nirgunasya yudaritam ahaituki avyavahita yavakti purushottame. From bhakti, this comes from bhakti to purushottam, the supreme person. The manifestation of unadulterated devotional service, this is basically a similar message to this description of what bhakti is, that we've just heard, ahaituki apratiyataya yatma supasiditi, is causeless, there is no desire to get anything, and apratiyata means it is the service is uninterrupted by anything selfish, jnana karma anavrita. It is continuously, because one can say I'm performing pure devotional service between 9 o'clock and 9 and 9:30 past 9. So that's pure devotional service, but that's not pure devotional service. It may have the ahay tuki part, but it doesn't have the apratiyata part, the uninterruptedness. So both need to be there. So the manifestation of unadulterated devotional service, Kapila Muni explains, is exhibited when one's mind is at once attracted to hearing the transcendental name and qualities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead who is residing in everyone's heart. This is a description of, he's describing this after he's described devotional service in the three modes of material nature, in the mode of goodness, passion, and ignorance. Now, this is transcendental devotional service, beyond the modes of material nature. It is spontaneous, it is springing, it is powerful, it is springing from the natural desire of the soul to serve Krishna. So as soon as such a devotee hears the names, or the pastimes, or the descriptions of the form of Krishna, his mind immediately becomes attracted. Not the opposite. We used to, when people would be wasting our time, we developed a technique. We'd say, why don't we have a kirtan? Why don't we read some Bhagavatam? And immediately they would, oh. They'd look at their watch. Oh, I have something very important I have to do right now. So, this is wonderful, that instead of being spontaneously attracted to sense enjoyment, a devotee is spontaneously attracted to Krishna. Just as the water of the Ganges flows naturally down towards the ocean, such devotional ecstasy, uninterrupted by any material condition, flows towards the Supreme Lord. And Prabhupada in his purport explains these points, which are really very similar to this description of this paradhamo from this verse. He describes, even the word ahaituki is used here, without reason. A pure devotee does not render loving service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead for any cause or for any benefit, material or spiritual. This is the first symptom of unalloyed devotion, anyabhilasita sunyam. He has no desire to fulfill by rendering devotional service. His desire was only to please Krishna. This is wonderful. It is selflessness. This is what we are longing for. Such devotional service is meant for the Purushottam, the Supreme Personality, and not for anyone else. Sometimes pseudo-devotees show devotion to many demigods, thinking the forms of the demigods to be the same as the Supreme Personality of Godhead's form. Avyavyahita means without cessation. A pure devotee must engage in the service of the Lord 24 hours a day without cessation. His life is so molded that at every minute and every second, he engages in some sort of devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Another meaning of the word avyavyahita is that the interest of the devotee and the interest of the Supreme Lord are on the same level. So the materialistic devotees or religionists also want to do that. They want God to fulfill their desires. Please give me make my business successful, let this horse win this race, let this stock go up, let my enemy's nose fall off. They want God to fulfill their desires, but when it discusses on the same level, it means that the living entity's interest is to fulfill Krishna's desires. The devotee has no interest but to fulfill the transcendental desire of the Supreme Lord. Such spontaneous service unto the Supreme Lord is transcendental and never contaminated by the modes of material nature. These are the symptoms of pure devotional service. Now the next verse is also very important, which answers the question. This verse, the seventh verse, describes the result of performing this devotional service. So here is one result. If one performs sadhana, one comes to the spontaneous platform, where one is spontaneously attracted to the messages of Krishna. And then if one has that type of eagerness, then riddhyanti sto, Krishna himself will cleanse the heart. So this coming to the spontaneous platform is a result of the sadhana, which is the highest religion, both the highest occupation that brings the shreyas to the people in general. And this verse tells of another aspect of the result, which is another aspect of the results. Vasudeve Bhagavati. Vasudeve Bhagavati. Bhakti Yoga Prayojita. Jnanayadyasu Vairagyam. Jnanam Chayarahaitukam. By rendering devotional service unto the Supreme Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, one immediately, in Sanskrit this is asu, jnanirat-yasu, asu means very quickly or immediately one acquires causeless knowledge and detachment from the world. Because people may think, oh, when I get knowledge that I'm not my body, or when I'm attached to things, so let me first get detached by performing karma kanda section of the Vedas, or let me first realize this, perform karma and then jnana. And then, after that, then I'll be able to take to this paradharma or bhakti or hokshaje. But here, Sutta Goswami answers, no. No. First, if you perform devotional service, then very, very, very quickly, jnanam chayad, you will get this jnan, you will get detachment, vairagya, you will get detachment from matter, and you will get knowledge, because knowledge means knowledge of matter and spirit. If one truly understands the very nature of matter and the nature of spirit, one will understand that it is impossible for spirit to be happy with matter. One will realize that. And therefore one will naturally become detached by performing devotional service. There is nothing outside of bhakti that one has to do. This is also explained in the 11th canto. There's bhakti para esha anubhava varaktir anyatra. This verse describes how bhakti, if one performs devotional service, three things happen automatically, practically speaking. One gets bhakti. One gets a loving devotion to Krishna. Para esha. Para esha. Esha means the supreme. And para esha means the controller. And para-isha means the supreme controller. So by practicing bhakti, Krishna consciousness, then one gets bhakti or love for the Supreme Lord. Bhakti para-isha anubhava and varaktya. Anubhava means direct perception of the Lord. It's not just theoretical, but one can actually directly perceive Krishna. This is also explained in the Bhagavad Gita in the 9th chapter. It is pratyaksha nasuyave, Krishna consciousness. This raja vidya is pratyaksha, it is directly perceived. And varaktir anyatra, that automatically one becomes detached. This is vairagyam, detachment. It doesn't mean tyag, or one renounces everything, one pushes everything away. One becomes detached from the mood of using things in one's service for sense gratification. And rather, one, in a detached way, uses everything in Krishna's service, seeing that everything belongs to Krishna. Anyatra, Chaisha, Trika, Ekakala. These three come at once. One gets bhakti, one becomes detached, and one has direct experience of Krishna. And then the sages give an example of tushti pushti. It's just as if after one begins to eat, chudapaya, tushti pushti chudapaya, anugazam, that one, when one eats, one becomes satisfied. And one gets pushti, nourishment. And also one becomes full, so one's detached from further eating. So similarly, when we take to pure devotional service, and it must be pure devotional service to get this result very quickly, one will become satisfied due to his bhakti. And one will have direct experience of Krishna, and that will give pushti and nourishment. Nourishment for the soul, for our life. And then one will get vairaktya or vairagya, detached, just as one eats, becomes detached from eating further and further and further because one is full. So therefore Prabhupada explains in his purport to this verse that nothing else is needed, no preliminary activities are needed. Sacrifice, charity, austerities, they're all corollary factors. In other words, they all come automatically through bhakti. And they are not prerequisites to bhakti. They don't come before bhakti. They come automatically by performing bhakti. So whether one is performing sadhana bhakti at different levels or the sadhya bhakti, one should simply perform bhakti. And then Prabhupada explains at the end of the purport, bhakti, the supermost occupation of the living being, leads one out of material sense enjoyment. That is the sign of a pure devotee. He is not a fool. That means he has jnana, jnana vairagya. And nor is he engaged in the inferior energies. That means he's detached. Nor does he have material values. This is not possible by dry reasoning. You cannot intellectually make yourself like this. But how is it possible? Prabhupada explains. It actually happens by the grace of the Almighty. By Krishna's grace. This is bhakti. One serves Krishna because in these two verses, in text 6, it describes by performing the devotional service, yato bhakti hocha jay ahaitukya pratiyata, that one performs bhakti, but one is not trying to get anything from that bhakti. So his motivation is causeless. There is no cause, no motive in his serving. So how does Krishna reciprocate with the causeless devotion of the bhakta? In the seventh verse, the word ahaitukim is also used, but that's from Krishna's side. He's causeless, he, out of his causeless mercy, the bhakta doesn't have to, in one sense, serve Krishna, he can serve Maya. Person doesn't have to, it's his free will, it's his desire, expression of his affection. To give Krishna what will please him. And Krishna, in reciprocation with that, ahaitaki, he gives knowledge, he gives detachment, he gives realization. So both are on the ahaitaki platform. And this is Dadami Buddhi Ogam Tam Yena Mam upiyantite, that Krishna gives, he gives Buddhi Yogi, gives the full realizations and knowledge how to approach him. So therefore, bhakti is the supermost occupation of the human being. Supermost, the essence of the scriptures, and that which will bring pleasure to the soul. Any questions? Actually, there's no. And he owns the ability to love, and Krishna reciprocates with that by giving the actual ladini, the shakti of love. He puts that in his heart. But he, the jiva has that in a small amount. And he makes his endeavor to love Krishna, and then Krishna reciprocates with the fullness of it. Like the seed. The jiva has the seed of everything within him. But the seed can't fructify on its own. The seed needs the water. So we need the water of Krishna's mercy upon us for the seed of our devotion to fructify. And then it fructifies into whatever that seed is, whatever our rasa or whatever our natural ability to love Krishna is. But with full sincerity. And that's ahaitukiya pratiyata anyabilasita sanyam. That's what we can do. We make our endeavor. But all we can do is offer a palm full of water to the Ganges. Everything belongs to Krishna. So our endeavor is what Krishna is requesting, the sincerity of endeavor. I don't have anything specific on that.